Welcome to Sport Faith Life with Brian Bolt and Chad Carlson, two guys who came together for one common purpose, to think deeply about sport and faith. They are sports scholars, they're coaches, and they're competitive athletes, or at least they were. And together, they've created Sport Faith Life, a conversation that meets at the intersection of sport and faith.
Welcome to Sport Faith Life. I'm Brian Bolt with my co-host Chad Carlson. And for the past several months, Chad and I have been walking through the fruits of the Spirit and the seven deadly sins as they relate to sport. And today is the last day. Today is the final fruit of the Spirit. We've done all the deadly sins. And I think we left a great one for the end, maybe even a joyous one for the end. The fruits of the Spirit, joy, is the one we're going to talk about today as it relates to sport. And so lots of different directions to go here. What seems to be easy, as happens often with these fruits of the Spirit, often takes a turn, and we'll see what happens with this one as well. I think I have to start by paying homage to this classic book that was written, I don't know the copyright date of this book, but do you know, Chad?
I want to say it's 1970s. I want to say it's the 70s.
Yeah. This is a classic book, but it does date back a ways, by Michael Novak, theologian, philosopher, who turned his attention to sport, which a lot of people were surprised by at the time, thinking, here's a guy who's written over 40 books, a well-known voice in public policy, culture, and he just decides, I'm going to write a book on sports, and he titles it The Joy of Sport. And I think it was shocking at the time that he took the tack that he did. He's gotten some criticism for the way that he approaches sport, and yet I'm so glad he did it. I'm so glad that he wrote about the joy of sports, and he did it, to be honest, kind of like we do on this podcast. We start from a place, right? We start with a bias. And Michael Novak started with a bias as well. And that bias was he loved sports. And I guess we would say that too. So even though we feel like we're okay at criticizing sport, deciding how sport might fit in the in sort of the culture and providing context to the way that sport is sometimes used or manipulated, at the same time, deep down, we love sport and we get a lot of joy out of sport. So before I go too much further, react to that, Chad. React to the idea that it was written about by Michael Novak. He called it the joy of sports. What did he mean?
Well, I think there's a little bit of a play on this book called The Joy of Sex that had come out not long before then. So I think there's something that had to do with that, like the joy of sports. But I think what he's getting at is that not just making fun of the title of that previous book, but I think actually the idea that, you know, we take great pleasure intrinsically in particular activities that we oftentimes see as playful, and that's it, right? Things that we don't give serious scholarly attention to. And so since apparently erotica had been scholars had entered into that sort of field, I think he's saying, well, you know, sport fits, right? That makes sense. You know, you and I talk a lot about the concept of play. And I remember very vividly at one point in time hearing something in grad school from one of my professors that, you know, sports are created by people. And so if they weren't fun, we wouldn't play them. Like, these are activities that we come up with. Like, nobody comes up with bad sports, or if we do come up with bad sports, they just don't last very long. And so the things that we do today have been enjoyed by people for decades, if not hundreds of years. And so they have these foundations and institutions built around them now because we experience joy or something similar to joy, maybe happiness, maybe fun. We can talk about those as being different, but that's where my mind goes with this. And I think Novak, from a Christian perspective, hit on it, because when we talk about one of those similar characteristics or similar phenomena, that is joy, happiness, fun, play, I think theologians oftentimes want to work towards joy as being sort of that biblical character.
Yeah, I like how you started to introduce some maybe similar words, happiness, fun. And certainly play, right? So play, we have made the argument that play is inherent in terms of humanity. It is built into who we are, that all people play, animals play, and that play has evolved into organized play or sport. It may not be pure play once we organize it in the way that we have with sport, but I love how you said it has to be fun for us to come back to it. It has to have some sort of attraction, some sort of element. And there's no doubt at the highest levels, there are things that draw you to sport, which means monetary, you know, rewards, opportunity for influence, all those sorts of things that come with high level sport. At the same time, most of those people got there by participating in play for its own sake, participating in sport simply because they wanted to. And in fact, that carries on for a long period of time before any benefit actually comes from sport. Maybe some physical benefit, those sorts of things, maybe some friendships. But at the same time, like any sort of recognizable, notable benefit comes late, much, much later, and for a very few. Most people participate in sports because they're attracted to it. They like it and they want to return to it. Sport is created or was created for lots of different reasons in a lot of different places, but in the end, it gets refined based on that idea of fun. If it's not fun, we change the rules, we change the boundaries, we change the object that's being used, we make adaptations, and we say, this was not quite good enough to attract people back to it, so what makes it fun? And part of that fun is that competitive element, that sense of fairness, that engagement in a skill that one side or the other side could win. And around that, I think Novak sort of pointed to these things as well. We've developed a bunch of rituals that also attract us. Rituals about our routines, about our pageantry, about winning and losing, some of the different ways that we approach sport give us a sense of or a feeling of a religion, in some ways like a transcendent feeling. He called that in some ways joy. It's hard to tell if he's being entirely honest about that word, but it seems authentic in the way that he talks about sport and he talks about joy.
There's definitely something about the sort of the transcendental experiences that we have, right? Or the emotions at play, the group solidarity, the expressions of joyfulness. And he's not coming from a charismatic background in terms of his faith, but I think there's something about the sacraments that lead to an authentic experience of worship that he sees in sport that's very similar to what he experienced in the Catholic faith. And yeah, there's something about that, you know, that joy comes from behaving in certain ways over and over again in deeply meaningful ways, right? That's how we grow in our faith. That's how we come to experience religion, experience God or the transcendent being, is through the sacraments, at least in his background. And so I think he sees a lot of the similarity in big time sport. And that's probably what made this so provocative. You know, in the late 1960s, early 1970s, we started to see like this whole grouping of theologians talking about play as a phenomenon, right? They're not talking about sport, they're talking about play. And so Novak has taken this a step farther and he's saying, you know, it's not just like the frivolous backyard activities or, you know, frolicking on the beach or in the water. It's actually like in these institutionalized sports, there's great joy that we experience, right? The crack of the bat that hits a home run to win the game, and there's just euphoria. You know, it's a religious experience. If not religious, it's at least spiritual, right? That there's something just beautiful, and the aesthetic qualities of these things are so high. So I think that's part of what he's getting at there, and maybe that speaks to what it is that gives us joy, at least in some sense. But there's a sensuousness to it, I think, that he seems to prioritize.
I think there's no doubt that the moment that you're trying to capture there, the crack of the bat, the soccer ball that goes back into the net right at the last second, there's that thrill of victory, right? And we can easily connect joy to that moment, to that experience. But sport is so full of other times, right? It you know, when we think about sport, that moment is pretty fleeting. And it makes me think of, you know, there's must be something deeper to joy. And I think biblically, that is also true. When we go back to just this idea of Paul saying in Philippians 2, you know, he talks about, you know, being imprisoned, not being sure, not being able to get and see to see someone, kind of encouraging a group of people. And he says, make my joy complete. Make my joy complete by being like-minded. And really, he goes on. It's a very famous passage. He goes on to talk about, you know, if you're encouraged at all by the love of Christ, then make my joy complete. And he talks about just being humble. And I think when we talk about joy, I've heard it said this way, happiness is something we pursue. Joy is something we choose. And so when we think about joy, we're talking about choosing joy, particularly in situations where it doesn't feel as if you should have joy. It doesn't feel like you should be the joyous person. So this challenges me for sure, because I am a wreck after sports losses. I do not take them well. I tend to, even as a coach, think that, you know, I have to somehow manipulate the emotions of my players after a defeat to try to get them motivated, to get them to feel the pain of the loss. And yet I wonder about this idea of joy and whether it is ultimately more satisfying, ultimately more motivating, and potentially really our requirement in moments of what others would call a low point. We choose joy.
Yeah. The part of that passage that you shared, you know, make my joy complete and being like-minded. I think there's something about that Novak is playing on, actually. I think he's talking about, you know, the joy of sport being in the community of it, and like the community of being in the stands with everybody, the community of players. And I think there's something about that. What makes an experience maybe what facilitates joy in an experience would be having like-mindedness, right? Among fans, that you're all sitting together cheering for the same team, right? We put fans of certain teams together in the stands, or fans that seem to have similar goals, right? So parents are sitting together in sections, or the student section is sitting there, right? Or the home stands and the away stands. And so there's a like-mindedness that lubricates the ability to find joy in some of these experiences. And I would say, from my own experience as an athlete, you know, even just playing recreationally or sort of ad hoc and pick up or kick around, if we have like-minded athletes, even if we're opponents, boy, there's a greater chance that I'm going to be able to find joy, that I'm going to be able to choose joy easier if we're all like-minded. That is, we want to play to win, or we all have sort of the same goal in mind that facilitates joy in my mind. So I love that like-mindedness idea that helps me to experience play, or helps me to choose that I'm going to experience joy regardless of the situation. So the like-mindedness thing is what really jumps out to me from what you just said.
Yeah. And from what you just said, let me just pick up on another part that you glossed over a little more quickly, and that's that community element. And I'm thinking now about, you know, I coach what many people would call an individual sport, right? We watch it as individuals at the highest levels, men and women competing. There is no team. They're competing for themselves in that final moment. Maybe they have a caddy, but that's about it. So in golf, we have that moment. But I coach team golf, and I often describe to my players, like, it is much more satisfying to win as a team, and it is much harder to lose as a team. You know, when you play on your own, the ramifications are limited. They're small. They're you. And when Paul is talking about his joy, it's not dependent on a community. He has joy. However, it's a fuller, richer, deeper joy when there are like-minded people that walk alongside with him. And we see this in the church. We see this in communities that rally in big moments. The idea that like-mindedness is supportive It's encouraging. It brings a sense of satisfaction that you can't give for yourself. And I think sport, just in the way it's crafted, is built for that type of activity. It's done in teams. And so this idea of community joy is sort of built into this. And I guess I would even say, you know, handling community loss in such a way that it has an element of joy. It has joy at its root, and it's a more reflective kind of joy.
Yeah, I get this. I feel this quite a bit as a Penn State fan living three states away. When I lived in Pennsylvania and I was surrounded by Penn State fans, the joy was different by an amplitude, right? The joy that we experienced was exponentially greater than what I have here now with just my family of four and nobody else that we know that's Penn State fans. And so there's something about the community, right? So my kids have a harder time falling in love with Penn State athletics because they see all their friends who love Michigan or Michigan State, and they have that communal joy when those teams win. And we have that with the four of us, but that's it, right? That's our network. It's a limited network. I mean, what's the old adage that shared joy is double the joy and shared grief is half the grief? You know, in some ways, when we experience these things in community, it changes how we experience them. And I think that's what you're getting at with the team, the team winning, that creates even more joy, right? It's more fun to win when you're winning as a part of a team. You have someone to share it with. And I think that's what Novak gets at. Sports are at their root community activities. I mean, they're things that we do with others. They don't have to be, but more often than not, when we're doing sport, we're doing so within a community, whether that community is physically present with us or not, we're doing it in community. If we're doing it alone, you can go play golf alone, but you're building on the giants of the sport. You're building on your past self, right? So there's still an imagined community there. There's still something to build on from a social perspective, but so often it is actually in the presence of physically of community.
You know, the other thing that Novak will talk about is just the difficulty sort of quotient. In other words, if you are able to overcome difficulty, the possibility of joy is greater, right? So the setups in sport are pretty clear, right? There are either equal teams or maybe even not equal teams where you're the underdog. Or there are long seasons, or there are burdens to overcome. Things like, you know, injury, team strife, you know, bad luck, bad moments. All these sorts of things where, like, it just builds over and over again. And to overcome those sorts of things, it presents a bit of an opportunity for that joy to sort of build. And when he talks about overcoming that difficulty, I think the scale part of it matters. I think joy can happen at every level, but the satisfaction of overcoming something really difficult and maybe even being patient when we start thinking about some of the other fruits of the spirit, being patient, long-suffering, getting to a point where there is some relief valve in the efforts. And there's some satisfaction in the end. So I think when we think about the landscape of sport by and large is more failure than success, right? When we think about seasons, one team wins, the rest of the teams go home unsatisfied and unhappy on some level. But the opportunity for joy is almost what we're talking about. Or the opportunity for overcoming these difficult moments is sort of built into sport like none other, and the highs are really high, and the lows are really low. I think the call to joy in both those circumstances is consistent. It's just handled in different ways.
Yeah, there's probably we can choose joy, like you said. We can choose joy in any of these situations for sure. And sometimes it's like joy hits us in the face, right? Where there's a huge win at the end of a season or something like that. Like you can't avoid joy, whether you want to choose it or not. There are other times when it's really hard to hold grief, pain, anguish, disappointment at bay. And it's in those moments that we, you know, that we're really tested on whether we're going to choose joy or not. And what do we choose if we're choosing joy at that point in time? And it seems like what we're choosing is to think differently from what the world tells us we need to be thinking about after a loss. We're hurt, we're humbled, loss of pride, you know, any number of things. We're dismayed, whatever it might be. We're pointing fingers, we're finding scapegoats. You know, that's how we're told to think after losses. And what seems to me to be among the most helpful things for Christians in sport is the ability to choose joy, knowing that when we're choosing joy, what we're choosing is something that's different from what the world is telling us to think after a loss. So I find like the redeeming quality of sport that is that even in losses, you know, we have a chance to choose joy and to see what, you know, to look on things, reflect on things differently. And it doesn't have to be about the wins and the losses, even though that's important and we want to win, but we can choose joy and we can see that there are things that were good and are worth celebrating for us in the moment and even after the moment in tough moments that occur during sport.
Yeah, I like how you describe that as choosing to think differently than what's expected of us. I think that is quite clear and modeled quite often for us as athletes or coaches, how we're expected to be or how we're expected to feel. I do wonder about that, what I kind of mentioned before, about that edge, about that competitive edge, and whether the choosing of joy is a pathway to losing an edge, or is it not? We talked a little bit about Scottie Scheffler and his, you know, his perspective on winning and losing, and how it seems like he's got such great perspective, but when you're at the top, it's so much easier to sound as if you have great perspective. I wonder about that edge that we talk about as athletes. Kind of think about that for me. Do you think that it's possible that that competitive edge is softened, rounded out by choosing joy in defeat?
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing, right? I mean, so many Christians in sport will point to like coaches and say, well, like look at John Wooden and the famed college basketball coach, UCLA, the winningest basketball coach in terms of championships of all time. And his wife said very clearly, like he would come home after a game and she could not tell whether he had won or lost. He was intensely competitive, but he wasn't competitive in a head-to-head way. What he wanted was excellence from his team day in and day out. And so I think that was the idea. If they're building, if they're getting better, playing better, like that's the whole goal. It's not about beating this team on this day and this team on this day. But those are generally byproducts of being more and more excellent every day. And so, you know, like you and I talk a lot during your golf season. And if I don't ask, I can't tell how your team's doing. And I've always appreciated that about you. Like I can tell if I ask, you know, then you'll play that role for me of sharing that the emotion that you should be feeling based on how your team is resulting recently. But I think there's something about you can be very competitive, but if your goal is for like to continue to play as well as you can and to improve in your ability to play as well as you can, like there's something about that. I also think that there's something about the struggle that a lot of competitors love. I don't think if you asked Michael Jordan whether he loved losing, I don't think he would say he loves losing at all, but I think he took immense amounts of pride and pleasure in the competition itself. And I think that's what drove him. And I think it was the experience. He wanted everything to be competitive. I mean, there's stories of him not wanting to lose playing billiards in the hotel basement, you know, in between weekend games. I think there's something that draws people in. It seems like he was probably in his world living life to the fullest when he was competing in something. So I wonder if there's something that's joyful about the act of competition itself for certain people.
I think that's true. I think there are some that are more drawn to it than others, and some who might receive more joy from it than others. I mean, we're all different people built differently with different talents. Sure. And an artist, yep, and and any other person that is gifted in another way would experience joy in their own way. And I think that we're just talking about a specific kind of joy that may come from sport or be embedded within sport or be a call within sport. I do think that you're getting onto something there when you say, first of all, my players wouldn't say that I'm the same after. I think they would be not good witnesses for me all the time. But I appreciate that after a day or 24 hours or whatever, I can sort that out. But I do think that the idea that somehow it is very freeing to release yourself from the result. So you talk about being competitive, but not being comparative. In other words, I love the competition of the moment. In some way, I can then root for my opponent to be as good as they can possibly be, because it's going to bring out the most in what I can do, and it's going to measure where I am. You know, those are the types of emotions that or even thought processes that it's hard to get to, but you can understand them. You can understand that ultimately to release yourself from the result and to recognize that in the end, I choose joy. There's a certain freedom in the way that you participate, in the way that you play. And I think that that is a goal. That is a goal for all of us as athletes, as Christian athletes, recognizing that the world has designed a way for this to go, and we can choose a different way.
That's the beauty of this, right? That's the beauty of it. And that's the reason why you and I have started this endeavor, is to be thinking in different ways about the things that we're drawn into. And sport's one of those things. I just love this topic. I love this fruit. I mean, this is my favorite fruit, right? This is like strawberries or watermelon for me in the summer. It's the one that I want to gorge on. And I also love the idea of choosing joy. And it's become sort of a mantra with certain individuals in my life that we choose joy, and we choose joy. And when we choose joy, we're choosing a different way, right? We're choosing something that encompasses so many other, that requires to have as its foundation so many other fruits of the spirit that allow us to get to this point of choosing joy. This is probably why, I mean, to get about as shallow as we've gotten, I think this is the only fruit of the spirit that people choose as a name for their children, isn't it?
Charity? No, that charity and love are often the name.
It's not a
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, charity is a name, but it's also a theological virtue, but it's not a fruit of the spirit.
Right. My nephew's self-control would contest with that, but yeah.
I guess patience. I've heard patience as a name.
Okay.
Before too.
Yeah.
But we choose joy for our children, right?
We do. And I do think, as we think of this big bowl of fruit that we spent a little time talking about and tasting, I think we're now just starting to think about how this might play out. And it's really invigorated the way that I approach sport. And I appreciate your insights as we've talked through all of these fruits of the spirit and the seven deadly sins. We continue to grow, and that's what I would encourage all of our listeners to as well. I mean, we all can look back and say, would have, could have, should have in relation to our participation in sport, our leadership in sport, and so on. But I think this just reminds us that we're all works in process here, and we're continually growing when we think about the fruits of the Spirit in sport. I, in terms of what we could do, I think there's just a deep richness in thinking about the fruits of the Spirit and how they apply in our inner and outer life in the world of sport. So thanks so much for spending a little bit of time with us. Thanks for listening to this series. We're excited to be able to move into a new series in the future, but Sport Faith Life has been a place for us to unpack some of these difficult concepts, but also just get a lot of joy out of having these conversations. So thanks very much, Chad, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Sport Faith Life podcast, conversation at the intersection of sport and faith. Read the corresponding blog post and learn more about us at sportfaithlife.com. Listen to more of our podcasts on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And follow us on social media to stay up to date with everything sport, faith, life.